Welcome into this 5 o'clock hour of News on the Hill, Friday edition here. I am Brighton McConnell. Thanks so much for tuning in. We begin with breaking news out of Chapel Hill, and actually it's breaking news that's right across the street from the 97.9 The Hill station and studio. Someone has been shot, at least one person shot, at the Camelot Village apartment complex on South Estes Drive. That is according to Chapel Hill police, who are continuing to investigate the premises after multiple shots were reportedly fired before 2:45 this afternoon. Police showed up on the scene shortly afterward, and they shared a tweet with the community saying that they might see an increased police presence there and telling people to avoid the area. We have seen some crime scene caution tape put up around there, continued to see police cars in that area, and at least one person has been taken to a nearby hospital because of those injuries sustained in the shooting. No word yet on whether there are other victims or so, but we know that police are continuing to interview and investigate witnesses following the incident, and Chapel Hill police have said that they are going to keep us posted as that situation continues to develop. But once again, a shooting here on South Estes Drive at the Camelot Village apartment complex right across from us at University Place. And you can find more information about that story on chapelboro.com as we continue to look for more details. In terms of state news, North Carolina is likely to surpass 2 million doses of the coronavirus vaccine administered at some point today. Crossing that benchmark comes at a time when the state as a whole, though, is seeing a brief shortage in its supply. The 300,000 doses of the vaccine slated to come to the state this week have largely been delayed because of the winter weather across the country. State officials say they are contacting vaccine distributors, asking them to either delay appointments or close their clinics in the meantime as the shipments travel. We know that some of our own local providers in the community have been caught up in this and affected. The Associated Press reports most of the doses that have been received so far have been sent to the more heavily populated areas of the state, which does include Raleigh and Durham in the Triangle, but most of Orange and Chatham County providers are certainly lagging behind in getting their shipments. Local leaders are encouraging patience for everyone during this process, especially as groups 1 and 2 are trying to continue to improve their vaccination parts right ahead of group 3 opening up on Wednesday. Orange County's health department waitlist for vaccine appointments crossed 20,000 this week, according to the department's weekly update. Speaking of Orange County news, the proposed Eflin Station in Bucky's project is no more in the county after the developer chose to withdraw its zoning application earlier this month. Now, with that proposal off the table, Orange County residents and government officials are reflecting on how to better serve the Eflin community going forward after some bitter opposition to that proposed development for many, many months. 97.9 The Hill's L. Karras has more on their thoughts.
Since the Eflin Station application was submitted to Orange County staff in August of 2020, the project had come under scrutiny from residents, who shared concerns about the environmental impact and traffic changes to the Eflin community off Interstate 40. On February 5th, the applicant chose to withdraw its application after months of community backlash and multiple public hearings with hours of aired grievances. Hillsborough resident and community activist Del Ward expressed his relief following the withdrawal of the Bucky's application. As an active member of A Voice for Eflin and Orange, a group of neighbors who came together in 2020 to oppose the rezoning petition submitted by Bucky's, Ward helped organize multiple events advocating for county commissioners to dismiss the project.
We want developers who understand why our community has protected and critically protected watersheds and are willing to work with us, our local government officials and community members, are willing to work with us under our existing UDO, which is Unified Development Ordinance, and our official land use plans. And Bucky's just simply didn't meet the bill on any of those things.
Two streams on the development site are in a protected watershed between two critical areas for wildlife habitat and water quality. Ward said the development of a gas station near or on the watershed means that runoff or any gas leaks could eventually pool into the Eno River.
Because the reason that Bucky's had such a backlash is because the community doesn't need one of the world's largest gas stations on a protected watershed that supplies over 7,000 residents with clean drinking water. That's not anything anyone anywhere needs.
While considering the rezoning application in January, county commissioners requested the development applicants to consider a few changes to their proposal. In addition to decreasing the amount of gas station pumps from 120, the board also requested Eflin Station developers to decrease the size of the proposed 64,000-square-foot retail center and include 10 electric vehicle charging stations to the site. These suggested changes were left unaddressed by the developers.
Orange County's not anti-development. We are anti-hurting our environment. We're pro-protecting people's water, people's quality of life. We're pro-good business. But what we're not for are companies that can't even commit to 10 electronic vehicle charging stations by opening day.
Chair of the Orange County Commissioners, Renee Price, said while parts of the community celebrated the applicant withdrawal, others were disappointed about the lost opportunity.
And I know for some people it was a sigh of relief to hear that it would not come, but and then at the same time, it was it caused quite some unease with other people that were hoping for the jobs that would have come from the general store portion of the project.
The Eflin Station development was expected to add more than $2 million to the local tax base each year, with approximately $1 million of those local taxes generated by Buc-ee's alone. According to its website, the gas station chain was also expected to bring up to 200 new jobs to the area. Despite this project not panning out, Price said the board has not abandoned its responsibility to bring economic development to Orange County.
This has really prompted us to look again and to really double down now and do something for Eflin. We've had a Eflin-Mebane small area plan sitting on the shelf for over 10 years now, and we have talked about it and we have studied it, and it is time that we really do something in Eflin to create that village, bring in economic development, and bring the community back.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
Time now for a look at sports. We have a couple of UNC programs in action at the moment. The UNC baseball team, the Diamond Heels, are underway. And man, it's a rip-roaring start so far. At the end of five innings, they are up on the James Madison Dukes 8-0. Austin Love pitching a great game so far. And Caleb Roberts has hit two home runs to start off his season. One of them a three-run bomb in the fourth inning to put UNC up 6-0 at the time. But once again, that score at the moment in Bochimer Stadium is 8-0 Carolina. Carolina softball also in action. They are playing Boston College in a doubleheader. They won the first game 7-2, and in the fourth inning, after adding on four more runs, they now lead 7-2 in the fifth in the very second game. Earlier today, we also had the top-ranked women's lacrosse team in action. They beat the number 8 Florida Gators 11-5, and then we have even more action scheduled for this weekend. UNC men's basketball is supposed to, we will see if that ends up happening, but is supposed to be playing Louisville, still slated for 6 p.m. on Saturday. Our coverage is going to begin right here on 97.9 The Hill at 4:30 with countdown to tip-off. Louisville is coming off a long COVID-induced pause, with the program saying the team is likely to be shorthanded on Saturday, but they are still aiming to play. That is important and good news for Carolina, as the Tar Heels are seeking to bolster their NCAA tournament resume and keep up some improved play they've seen in the calendar year, the new calendar year. UNC women's basketball was in action last night. Graduate guard Stephanie Watts poured in a game-high 26 points to lead the team to a 77-64 win over Clemson. Freshman point guard Deja Kelly also had a good performance with 19, her best scoring game since December. It was the third consecutive victory for Courtney Banghart's program, who now sit at 11-8 on the season, and they're going to try and go for their second upset against number 4 NC State on Saturday this season. That game is going to be tipping off at noon in Raleigh, and you'll be able to hear it right here on 97.9 The Hill, beginning at 11:30. One last note, women's basketball wasn't the only team in action last night. The volleyball team also opened up their spring season Thursday night. The program regained its fall form with a 3-0 victory over Appalachian State, dominating in all three sets. Head coach Joe Segula's team is now 7-2 overall, with those results from the fall carrying over into the spring. They're going to return to action next Saturday with a road match against East Carolina. More local news to catch you up on here, including some unusual news from the Chapel Hill Carrboro City School Board last night. At their meeting, as they were deciding on who to fill a vacant seat on the board left by Dr. Amy Fowler's departure to the Orange County Commissioners, the current school board members narrowed it down to four candidates that they were voting between, and they continued to tie between two candidates. Those were Lisa Cayley and Carmen Huerta Babet, and after several rounds of voting that were tied at 3-3, they ended up deciding in a coin flip, and Lisa Cayley was the candidate who ultimately ended up being chosen. Cayley is going to be sworn into the position at their meeting on March 4th, and she's going to serve out the remaining couple of months on that seat. It will be up in November, since Dr. Fowler was elected to that position in 2017. More information about that on chapelboro.com, as well as information about the ongoing effort to move back to in-person instruction for both CHCCS and Orange County schools. Both districts are now just weeks away from welcoming more students back into their classrooms. And we've heard community response from educators that getting vaccinated against COVID-19 is a big factor in their comfort level getting back to classrooms. Some recent research from Duke University, though, says the safety measures required by the state government should be enough to protect from coronavirus spreading within a school setting. 97.9 The Hill's Ava Pukach has more.
Educators in pre-K through 12 schools will be eligible to receive a COVID vaccine February 24th. Amid the district's preparations for students to return to the classroom, there are still some concerns about teachers being vaccinated prior to in-person instruction as the waitlist for a vaccine continues to grow. Currently, healthcare workers and those over the age of 65 are eligible to be vaccinated under groups 1 and 2. Research from Duke University shows in-person learning can resume safely and mitigation can lower and prevent transmission in school settings. While some people may be worried about receiving a vaccine prior to in-person instruction, it's not the primary concern amongst some educators. Christian Stevens, an associate professor of education at Duke University, said some of the concern is actually about the form of instruction for the school district.
They're all very eager to return to school. They prefer to see their students in person, and they miss seeing them, and they know that the classroom, in the traditional sense, is the best place for students to be. In terms of concerns, I think they primarily have to do with instructional concerns rather than mitigation concerns. So the concern is, what does instruction look like? How do I need to plan based on the model that my particular school or district is using?
Some schools have already opened with hybrid models alternating which students are in the school building, while others continue to provide remote learning options. Dr. Kanisha Zimmerman, a member of the ABC Science Collaborative and associate professor of pediatrics in the Division of Critical Care Medicine at Duke University Medical Center, said there is not a reason why mitigation strategies working outside of the school building would not work inside the school building as well.
We know, however, that schools are really good at enforcing rules. And I think that that really is the difference. We've talked to these superintendents, we talked to the teachers and to the principals, and they're working really hard to make sure that people are actually enforcing the mitigation measures. And I think it's due to their dedication and leadership that this has been so successful.
While frequent testing in a college setting may be helpful for tracking cases and preventing new clusters, it does not apply to pre-K through 12 schools. Dr. Abukin Akinboyo, a member of the ABC Science Collaborative and an assistant professor of pediatrics in the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases in the Duke School of Medicine, said the reasoning is college students are gathering from multiple areas and going other places, whereas pre-K through 12 students return home to their communities every day.
For the most part, a lot of schools are based in at a district or city level and are just a reflection of local communities with appropriate mitigation practices. Even in settings that had high community rates, we are still seeing low spread within the school setting.
The study found kids going to parties and playdates were more likely to contract the virus than the kids who were just going to school. This means students have the same likelihood of being infected regardless of whether schools are open or closed. Zimmerman said although more testing is available, everyone will have to adhere to mitigation strategies.
Just because we have testing does not give us a free pass to kind of relax what we're doing, to not mask, to not distance, to not wash our hands, and to not be really super vigilant about these strategies.
The main question, Zimmerman said, is not whether people will be infected, but rather how to put people in an environment with guidances and rules to prevent transmission at high rates. This does not mean there is one solution for every community, as more work still needs to be done to keep people safe in all schools. For educator concerns, Stevens said school systems need to be responsive to potential fears.
Just as they're making accommodations for the families who are making the choice not to send their children back to school at this time, we have to understand that this is a serious disease. And while the risk may be minimal for some groups, the fear is real.
Orange County schools are set to return to in-person instruction March 8th. Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools will resume April 19th. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ava Pukach.